Chapter 10. Two Legios.
There is a legio that is composed entirely of women. Can you imagine such a thing?
That was the first Terent Hartek had heard of the Legio Solaria. It had been Averna who told him, a princeps he respected well past the moment he had to kill her. Her loss was a shame, for she was an able warrior and a good friend, but she would not renounce her vows to the Emperor, and so she and her Titan had died under Nuntio Dolores's guns. All that had come later. Fate had its sense of humour. Before Averna mentioned the Legio Solaria, Hartek knew next to nothing of them. Not long after Averna had said those words, an emissary mission of the Legio Solaria arrived at Legio Vulpa's field fortress on the newly compliant Barkan's world. The emissary was a woman, of course. Within hours of her arrival, Hartek learned the two Legios were to fight alongside each other. Although they were enjoined to fight together by the Primarch, Ferus Manus, bringing two Legios to walk side by side was not so simple as ordering it to be so. Inter-Legio alliance necessitated negotiations of the most complex sort. There were days of quibbling, everything from orders of precedence in parade, seniority of command in mixed battle groups, priority of supply and hierarchies in intermingled technoclades were up for negotiation. There was a pecking order in the Collegia Titanica. Militaris grade mattered less than an order's date of patent. Older generally trumped bigger. But the relative numbers of god machines and the size and power of a Legio's warden domains were important too. Like everything the Martians did, the relative rank of one Legio in regard to another was mind-numbingly complex, and despite the application of numerous algorithms, or maybe because of their opaqueness, so much of it was subjective. The princeps of a god engine valued pride over all other vices, and it forced him to trumpet his own virtues loudly. The princeps could not get involved themselves if oil and blood were not to be shed. Matters of cooperation were arranged by the tech priests of the Legios, usually with an intermediary drawn from a third-party forge world. Unfortunately, Technis hierarchy was squared in complexity when two forge worlds dealt with one another, and multiplied to the power of all egos involved, where there were three. Talks were conducted in furiously paced Binharic behind closed doors. As in all matters, the Mechanicum was jealous of its secrets. The tech priests assiduously projected an air of unity for fear of revealing their internal fractions to the overlords of Terra. Nowhere was this compact of unity more important than when presenting their mightiest assets of war to outsiders. It was an unspoken rule, adhered to by all factions, whether avowed worshippers of the Emperor as Omnissiah or deeply sceptical of the same. The Legios had to appear unified and ready to march to Mars's command. This was what the Martians euphemistically called informational rerouting around non-definable factual parameters, or a lie, as more prosaic beings would name it. Therefore, very few people outside the Mechanicum priesthood were permitted to see any of the ruthless horse trading that underpinned Legio alliances, and that included the Titan crews. For the princeps and moderati, who were closer to humanity than the priests were, there was a feast. The princeps were foremost a martial order, so tales of victory and notable escapades were exchanged, delivered in the usual mode by specially modified cyberbards. Esher Ani Mohana had been in the delegation, and it was during the moment of exchange before the feast that Terent Hartek first met her. Hartek spotted her as soon as she walked in. She stood out among the 30-strong cadre of Solaria princeps, like a candle in the dark. She had the bearing of an apex predator, lean and graceful, her killing power hidden by a languidness that he knew, as a killer himself, could be cast aside in the blink of an eye. Her smiles flashed fangs. Death could come unexpectedly from a woman like that. She intrigued him. He was attracted to her immediately. During the moment of exchange, all present were permitted to speak with whomever they chose, while the tech lords of the Legio cults publicly read their opening positions to each other. Closed negotiations would commence soon after. For the priesthood, it was a guard against disingenuity, while the accompanying social ritual was supposed to help bring the two legios together. To begin with, there was an uneasy détente. The Death Stalkers watched their guests suspiciously. The Imperial Hunters provoked them with secret smiles. Partick was the boldest. He broke the silence and marched up to Esher Anni-Mohana.
"You are Esher Anni-Mohana," he stated.
He saluted her with a full aquila, hands splayed across his chest. Her returning smile was condescending. She forewent the salute and clicked her heels instead.
"I am. Princeps of Bestia Est," she said.
"The beast is," said Terent Hartek,
translating the High Gothic into the common speech.
"You are no beast. You look like a huntress."
"That is because I am," she said with a confident smile.
"We all are, of course." Her smile took on elements of flirtation and mockery.
"We are the Imperial Hunters."
The women with her laughed.
"What is the class of your titan?" he said.
Her forehead wrinkled between raised eyebrows.
"This is a fine introduction," she said. "I heard the lords of your legio never learn the identities of their moderati, but I thought a princeps might offer his name in greeting to another commander."
Hartek tensed. The situation was not proceeding as he had planned. Legio Vulpa was a forthright order. Assess the target, advance and destroy. Escher slipped aside from the first volley of conversation like gunsmoke on a breeze. He was gladdened when others approached their opposite numbers and began making their own introductions. Some princeps pledged vows of support to their would-be allies. Others simply bragged about their prowess. Soon the room was abuzz with human and machine speech, covering Hartek's discomfiture.
"I apologize," he said, the words coming hard to him. "I am Terent Hartek, Princeps of Nuntio Dolores."
"The Herald of Sorrow."
She flashed another wounding smile.
"Do you live up to your Titan's name?"
His own expression set hard.
"So my enemies say, in the moments before their deaths."
"How impressive."
She looked about herself, amused at the display around her. The hunters were more at ease than their hosts, but tentative friendships were budding. The line of green and dark red uniforms was beginning to mingle, two sets of particles mixed by inevitable social physics.
"Like this hall. It is beautiful, if a little brutal in design. Each to their own, I suppose."
"Oh, this is only a field base," he said.
She nodded.
"It is mightier than our order's base fortress. But then we are swift runners. We live on the wind."
She smiled again. He was not entirely sure she was joking.
"You are a fearsome order, so I hear."
She smiled.
"So then, is it true?"
"What?"
"What I heard.
That you do not learn your crew's names." He nodded.
"It is true. Crewing a titan requires men of honour. Bravery, loyalty, decisiveness. These are the skills our legio demands of every member of its titan crews. We princeps are more than those we command. We are the minds of the god engines. The moderati are components in the engine. They are beneath us."
"You speak of them like they are servitors."
"Servitors have no will of their own. Our moderati understand our code. They are part of it. From their ranks, we raise new princeps. They fight harder to be granted their own command. The day they cast off their mask and are accepted into our ranks is one of great honour."
"You were a moderati once?"
"I was. Every princeps was. Were you?"
"Of course."
Of course, he echoed. Then answer this, he said. When you were a moderati, did you seek to impose your view upon the princeps? Did you question his orders? Did you act of your own accord?
Her orders, corrected Escher.
Hers, his, it doesn't matter. He shrugged. Only resolve matters. Affection does not matter. Personal ties are an encumbrance. I do not make friends with my pistol. To be a moderati is to be a part of a god machine, but to be a princeps is to be one. The chance for command is enough of an honour for any man. They need no more.
An interesting perspective, she said. What of the mind impulse unit? When you link with your engines, do you not touch binds?
That is the nature of the mechanism, he said,
allowing himself a little of his own condescension.
Then you must know something of your crew.
Nothing at all, he said. We undergo rigorous training to banish all extraneous thought. Only mental activity pertaining to the successful prosecution of war is permitted. You experience the machine trance?
Yes.
Not like we do, he said. Our mental techniques purify it. We excel at union. When our minds mingle over the interface, we achieve a greater unity with our titans than other legios. If we did not, then every personal feeling, all the envies and passions and the doubts men feel would poison the blessedness of psychomechanical congregation, and the machine would suffer. The mission would suffer. With our humanity separated, we are free to abandon the weakness of the flesh. We embrace the full fury of the god engines and wreak the destruction that must be done without either doubt or regret.
He was speaking as fervently as one of the Legio tech priests. She laughed at him for it, and his hackles rose.
You take all this too lightly, madam. By banishing humanity, we are one with the machine. Can you say the same?
Forgive me, she said. I am insulting your honour, and I do not mean to. It is just that your way is so different to ours. Actually, our methods are completely opposed. She plucked a glass of sparkling wine from a server's plate and sipped it. We all know each other deeply. We hold nothing back. We share everything. That way there are no difficulties in achieving a deep mind blend. We cannot surprise each other because we know all there is to know about one another. We know how we will react, and all our strengths and weaknesses. We live together and hunt together. Our bonds lessen the pain of withdrawal from the machine when we are not at war.
I hear you lie with each other, he scoffed.
We do, she said, and glanced at him. A human body has its needs. Like I said, we share everything.
Hartek noted how smoothly the Imperial hunters moved. They slid between the stolid Death Stalkers as water slides through reeds. If their titans moved as easily as the women, perhaps their way of battle had something to recommend it. His own sense of superiority prevented him from saying so.
Do you not indulge the flesh? She asked. We are as we are because the machine god decreed it. The mechanisms of bodily pleasure are his gift.
Sometimes, Hartek admitted.
He felt ashamed. He had that yearning. He felt it for her, right then.
It is a weakness I do my best to control. It interferes with the state of perfect union.
It is not a weakness, said Escher. Nor is it a right or an obligation, as others maintain. But it is an opportunity. You feel shame for no reason. No permanent attachments are allowed, of course, she went on, either oblivious to his rising passion or deliberately snubbing it. That would bring complications. But we believe all of human nature must be embraced if the machine is to have balance. She looked at him. Your Legio has a reputation for cruelty. We do not. Perhaps your methodology separates you too much from mankind.
Yours has a reputation for cravenness, he said back.
He was disappointed when she did not take offence.
It might look that way, but our tactics are sound. Our engine loss-to-victory ratio is better than all but three other legios.
She stared at him provocatively and repeated herself for emphasis.
Only three other
of all the orders of the Collegia Titanica, can claim to lose fewer god engines per battle than we do. We strike, we fall back, we bleed the enemy's strength. When the time is right, we deliver the death blow. Your order walks forwards, levelling everything that is found in front of it. It is simplistic. Some might say you are too much enthralled to the machine spirits of your titans.
Some might die if they said so.
Ah, so it makes you angry that I speak so. Do you see? She said. She drank more of her wine. That is exactly what I'm talking about. We are a synthesis, humanity and machine. She laced her fingers together around the glass and rocked her hands back and forth. The human is essential to the well-being of the machine. It cannot be denied that mankind, as a part of the Machinacosma, is holy in itself. The form of the engines mimics that of holy humanity. This, she swept her hand down her body, trunk, head, limbs, it is the form ordained by the machine god. If the form were unimportant, the engines we make would be different. But by making them in our own image, we make them in his. If we deny our own humanity, we deny part of our god's plan. We deny him.
Oh, I could introduce you to 100 tech priests who would disagree with you.
And I could find 100 who would agree with me, she said. There is room for every manner of worship in the cult, but some are closer to the machine god's intent than others. He grunted aggressively. A member of his own legio would have been silenced, but she challenged him. That's not to your liking, she said.
He laughed himself. Some of his annoyance boiled off with it. Sometimes I wish for a little more clarity from our priests and magi, he said. Battle is simple. Theology annoys me. If that offends you, we have little to talk about.
Very little offends me, Escher said.
That is good.
Despite her attitude, he was feeling more comfortable. He found her candor refreshing.
It's good to be above matters of little importance. All this chatter is of no consequence.
He paused.
Might I show you what is?
Her eyes gleamed. She guessed at what he offered, perhaps both parts of it. You would allow me to see Legio Volpa's engines?
There will be a formal display tomorrow, but you can see them now if you like, without the distraction of the others.
Isn't there some sort of ceremony to come?
The blooding, said Hartek. A little vitae is spilled and drawn upon the oath plate of our Legio. Nothing you will regret missing. We'll be back in time for the feast and the exchange of legends.
Then I would like very much to see the engines, she said.
She drained her glass and placed it on a table.
He looked around himself. He motioned to her, extending his hand around her back to shepherd her through the throng. He was surprised when she turned and took hold of it. Her hand was tiny in his, and cool, as if she had come in from a long spell outdoors.
This way, he said.
He led her through the crowd, behind long drapes, filling the gaps between the pillars of the hall's colonnade. In the closed-off corridor made by the curtains it was darker, and the rising chatter between the two legios muffled. Electroflambeau gave off dancing light but no heat, and it was cool away from the press of bodies. A Dulla's menial, carrying a huge ewer of wine, bustled past, his eyes averted from his betters. Hartek paid him no more heed than he would a stone. Through the curtained-off space he led her, past high windows of heat-shocked crystal, looking out over the conquered world. The stone of the walls was freshly cut, and the minerals twinkled in the false firelight. Legio Volpa had claimed the highest mountain for their lair, the home of gods in the world's overthrown creed. A bold statement to imprint the imperial truth on the planet for all time. Gods of metal to banish those of make-believe. A squat circular steel door, newly made and still gleaming, filled the middle of the hall's narrower wall. Hartek spoke to Escher. He was reluctant to release her hand, but did so.
Look away, please.
He half expected her to refuse, but she obliged. On the far side of the curtains, the volume of chatter was rising, bragging and boasting, not all of it good-natured. Hartek approached the door. Before he breathed upon its hidden gene sensors, he checked the huntress was still looking away. Locks clanked all around the door, and it rolled aside.
"You are careful,"
she said, turning back to face him.
"You aren't. I take you to the underworld. Such passages are never opened lightly."
They passed into a long tubular corridor, leading down into the mountain. Every part of its surface, apart from the floor, was lined with soft plastic pipes and bundled cables. There was no door at the far end. The corridor simply opened into a larger space. The quality of sound and movement of air suggested great volume. They passed between a pair of guards, hidden in sentry holes. The guards came alert as soon as the couple tripped their detection beams and emerged like figures in an elaborate clock. Hartek waved a hand. They read the ident marker embedded in his wrist and retreated into their alcoves without a word. The challenge done, Escher and Hartek stepped out into Legio Volpa's Hall of Armaments. 70 titans stood in bays carved into the flesh of the mountain, like forgotten deities unearthed from an underground tomb. They faced each other over a wide service road, arranged by size rather than maniple. Most had been refitted and repaired after the compliance, although half a dozen were cocooned by repair scaffolds. Limbs protruded from behind the sheeting covering the towers, so that they looked like giant patients in a Medicaid bay, prepared for surgery. The remainder stood proudly in full view. Their banners had been washed and repaired, and fresh honours stitched into them. The deep red and cream of their livery gleamed with polish. The metallic edgings of their armour plates were clean, buffed to a high shine. At the very far end of the hall, the gates were open, and sunlight shone through their high arch. So distant and bright, no detail of the outside was visible through the glare. The titans looked like they were the guardians of a heavenly portal. Hartek stopped.
"Look upon this hall and Halterwell. What generations will come after and see these fortresses we make and wonder, as we wonder at the ruins of Xenos empires gone before, and say, what giants once stood here?"
"Very poetic," she said.
She took a few steps ahead of him, neck craned, eyes taking in every detail.
"They're not my lines. I quote one of the remembrances accompanying the fleet," said Hartek. "He has written volumes of verse about the Legio, but that line sticks with me."
"You do not think the histories will tell those of the future exactly what they need to know?" she asked.
"No empire lasts forever. Everything is undone. Time fells even the gods. Poetry tells truths better than history."
"There are no gods, but the one who is three," she said, looking back at him.
"Figuratively speaking," he said,
becoming irritated that she did not share his awe at the sight of his Legio's engines, or his passion for the verse. She turned to face him.
"Then why do you fight, if our Imperium will one day fail?"
"For honour," he said. "For glory. I was born to fight. It is my purpose to bring ruin to the Emperor's enemies. Destruction has a beauty of its own. I follow the path of the Machina Cosma. The universe itself works relentlessly to render the complex simple in preparation for the great reforging. I am a holy agent of entropy."
"Glory and honour are fleeting," she said. "They die with the man who prizes them."
"That is the nature of entropy," he agreed.
"Entropy is to be resisted," she said.
He moved his hand in a way that meant neither yes nor no.
"Why do you fight?"
he asked. She shrugged.
"For the future, and the hope that perhaps our species might succeed where others have not. I do not believe in the tenets of the entropic creed."
"It is a sensible philosophy."
"It is a challenge set us by the machine god.
What is technology but the creation of complexity from the decaying system of the universe? Moisture dripped from somewhere high overhead. A large puddle had gathered in the road. Each drip broke the reflections of the god machines into rings and sent a glittering spray of droplets dancing in the sunlight blazing from outside.
Why is it that you have only women in your legio?
Escher smiled. You've been wanting to know that since you greeted me.
I have.
It is simply our custom.
Then tell me where this custom comes from.
It is just a custom. Hartek struggled to maintain his humour. He was equally as irritated as he was attracted to this strange woman, and he desired to know.
Humour me, he said. Please.
Hartek hardly ever said please. He tasted the word. It fit his mouth poorly.
Very well,
she said. She put her hands behind her back in a way that suggested she took the stance habitually, and looked back over Vulpa's titans.
The founding mothers of our order were of the knightly house of Vi, one of several found on the planet Procon.
Never heard of it, said Hartek.
You are hearing of it now, she said teasingly.
The conflict of desire and annoyance in Hartek intensified.
All my kind hail from there, ultimately, said Escher.
She walked on through the silence of the hall, looking over at the gigantic shapes of the war engines, as if she were appraising beasts of burden in a backworld market. Hartek followed. Their echoing footsteps set up an uneasy syncopation, always threatening to fall out of rhythm.
The Mechanicum came to Procon not long after the first iterators visited. The promises of the Imperium were vague, those of the Martians more concrete, shall we say.
The Mechanicum, bargain of fealty. Weapons, technology, materiel, knowledge and aid, he said. That I know well.
Escher nodded.
Procon's knights were old. Its lords had lost most of the secrets needed to keep their mounts running. Steam took the place of plasma. Explosive lances and steel swords were wielded instead of energy weapons. From what I know, I don't think the knight suits would have survived longer than a few more generations had the priests not come.
Poor incentive for the priests.
She smiled.
Ah, there were other devices on Procon that the Mechanicum coveted.
Aren't there always? The priests are rapacious.
Hartek moved to Escher's side. She matched her footsteps to his, but they immediately began to drift out of time again.
I'll bet they paraded the finest examples of knightly tech they could, and asked for only a few small favours in return.
Naturally, she said. In fact, I think they brought a lance of House Tyrannus with them for that very purpose. The knights of Procon must have looked like beggars in their battered engines. They probably meant to look proud, but felt like fools.
Hartek grunted a laugh.
So what did these foolish beggars sell for their shining new guns and warsuits?
Well, therein lies the tale, said Escher.
Hartek was very close. He was a large man, physically imposing, and he loomed over her. They stopped and turned to face each other. She flashed a smile and laid a hand on his chest, not to push away, but to invite him in.
There was a contest, she said, to snatch a favour of the machine and take it to the representatives of Mars visiting the planet. The knights were supposed to fight for it, but the Great Mother took it instead. House Vi cheated, they say. The women of that world were not permitted to ride within the knights as they are elsewhere. Procon is a stratified place.
Is that so? Said Hartek. Then how did she come to take it?
There is a goddess they used to follow on Procon, Parkmetris of the Hunt, popular with women. The Great Mother was a devotee. She rode a horse through a melee of knights and stole the prize.
A horse? He said.
He moved closer.
You know, an equid. An ancient beast of terror. They're common on some worlds. I saw one once. They're quite beautiful. The point is, her mount was flesh and blood. She could have died. She broke the rules of the contest.
But the Mechanicum exploited the situation and said her house had won. Her father, who was the king, by the way, Rahajanin, thought he could exploit them in return. Part of the exchange was to be a tithe of young nobles to go to Tigris. Rahajanin saw the opportunity to save his warriors, and so offered the daughters of his house instead. He thought he was being clever. His daughter was troublesome. His knights were valuable. But, she whispered, they were close enough to one another that they shared breath. Rahajanin was deceived. He could think only as a beggar king. He did not know what the Mechanicum required his warriors for. He thought he had tricked the Red Priests and saved his best warriors for himself, selling off his house's daughters in their stead to who knew what fate. He did not care. He kept his knights. They gained the technologies of the outland men. What did it matter to him if it cost him a few women?
Sounds like a good deal to me, said Hartek.
Escher shook her head. Like most lords of the knightly houses, Rahajanin's view was fatally constrained. He had no conception of the power of Terra, or Mars. He could not guess at the might wielded by the Mechanicum. He did not know that only weeks' travel away, war engines far mightier than those he had bartered his children for, stood sentinel over a new world of industry, the forge world Tigris. He did not know of the Titans. So, our great mother was sent away from the plains and forests, away from her brothers, away from her beloved mount, her and 150 other bartered daughters of House Fi. The smile she gave him now was less mocking, more of pleasure. It did not matter to the Mechanicum of Tigris whether the knightly houses provided males or females. They required good gene stock with proven compatibility with mind impulse units from a politically neutral source, that is all. And so the Great Mother's bitterness at her exile turned to a grim delight as she and her sisters were trained as the mistresses of a new legio of god machines. When she returned to Procon several years later, her father had to kneel before her. I imagine she laughed to see that. His vaunted war suit was a child before the machine she ruled. He had played the cunning king and unwittingly elevated his daughter to godhood.
A foolish king, Hartek agreed. But why do you remain only women? This was years ago, surely. What about loss replacement, new recruits?
How do you recruit?
Stringent testing of all children of our legio for the desired attributes. Courage, ferocity, and intelligence.
And the rest? He smiled humorlessly.
You know what happens to the rest. We are well provided with servitors. Every child of our legio knows the price if they are found wanting. It encourages the ruthlessness we require.
Well, we are different.
She laid her other hand on his chest. Hartek shrugged.
Every legio has its ways. Some are better than others.
Yours are the best.
He grinned savagely.
Your own ways are always the best.
The exiled daughters made a pact within their new legio that no man would ever command them, that they would take their own counsel, and that although they were forbidden from worshipping her, they would honour the principles of the sacred huntress alongside the machine god. Since the day of our founding, every single one of our Legio Titan crew has been female.
What do you do with the males?
You know what happens to the rest, she said, echoing his words.
Really? Servitors?
She laughed. No. Most of us are vat-born, selected to be female at conception. The few natural males we give birth to are given to the priesthood. Many end up serving the Legio as tech priests.
But some are servitors.
Yes, some are, she admitted.
He moved in closer to her, their cheeks brushed.
For someone who was ashamed of his desires, you seem very practiced.
I said I was imperfect. I never said I did not indulge myself, he said. Tell me, where do these male children come from?
He breathed into her ear.
You allow no pair bonding, and you are all female anyway. Do the tech priests open up their gene vaults for you to choose?
Oh, no, Escher whispered back. We don't make them all like that. Hartek kissed her with the ferocity she welcomed. The god machines stared across the aisle at one another, unconcerned by the doings of the mortals at their feet. And that was how Terent Hartek met Escher Ani Mohana.